Well, we're in chapter 4 of the book of Romans tonight, lesson 5 in the lesson book, page number 15. Justification by faith without works, or without the deeds, rather, of the law, proven by Abraham's justification is the line he has up there. And remember, the argument that we leave chapter 3 with is the people of the world is saying that God's righteousness is not real. He's not a righteous God because he has unrighteous subjects. That's kind of it in a nutshell. Because of the Jews, the way they acted, people were looking at this, or the Jews were looking at this as, if God is so righteous, then how can he accept broken people, as we'd probably say in today's terms? So therefore, God must not be what he's cracked up to be. Paul says that's a false argument. That's a bad argument. It's not the right argument. He begins to dismantle that argument throughout to the end of chapter 3. Now, chapter 4 is him giving the example of why their argument is bad. And he uses, three things in this chapter to show them that their argument is a bad argument. And he uses things. Remember, he's speaking to the Jews. And he uses things they understand out of the old law. And so his biggest example in chapter 4 is who? Abraham. Abraham is proof of God's righteousness. I think that's what he's trying to prove in this chapter. And so this is the way he's going to argue this. And at the end, I'm going to read to you a little blurb, a little summary that I think will help pull it together. Do what? The questions were, some of these were a little bit challenging, but when you finally get your mind wrapped around it, I think we have a good understanding. As Timothy said a couple of weeks ago, you know, whenever it's mentioned about how Paul's writing sometimes are hard to be understood, we bump into a little of this throughout Romans. Even though this is not considered, had considered us getting, or the some of the passages later on are considered to be a lot harder than these passages, believe it or not, by most. Well, let us read the chapter over before we begin our discussion, or at least read part of the chapter. All right, we're going to...
Okay, chapter 4.
Yep, let's read verses 1 through 12.
Now to him that worketh is the reward not reckoned of grace, but of debt. But to him that worketh not, but believeth on him that justified the ungodly, his faith is counted for righteousness. Even as David also described the blessedness of the man unto whom God imputed righteousness without works, saying, blessed are they whose iniquities are forgiven and whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord will not impute sin. Cometh this blessedness then upon the circumcision only, or upon the uncircumcision also? For we say that faith was reckoned to Abraham for righteousness. How was it then reckoned? When he was in circumcision, or in uncircumcision? Not in circumcision, but in uncircumcision? And he received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he had yet being uncircumcised, that he might be the father of all them that believe, though they be not circumcised, that righteousness might be imputed unto them also, and the father of circumcision to them who are not of the the circumcision only, but who also walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham, which he had being yet uncircumcised.
All right. Thought and discussion questions. Romans 3, verse 28 definitely states that one is justified by faith without the
deeds
of the law. Faith, deeds, law. What did Abraham obtain by works?
Justification.
All right, justification. Now, you could answer that a different way. Depends on your perspective. Because you could, to support our argument, or support his argument, Paul's argument here about justification, it comes through justification through faith. You can say, you could also answer that, that Abraham, what Abraham did by works really amounted to nothing. Because works alone would not do it, but the works were a demonstration of the faith that was through the justification, the justification process, you might say. The next part of the question says, if Abraham had been justified by perfect obedience, then his justification would have been a matter of blank and not blank. Look at verse number 4. Verse number 4. This is where reading another translation will help you out. Number 4. Now to him that worketh is the reward not reckoned of grace, but of debt. Let me read this in a different translation. Now to the one who works, his wages are not counted as a gift, but as his due. In other words, what is required. So if Abraham had been justified by perfect obedience, then his justification would have been a matter of debt and not of grace, because he would have been working through it. He'd been working towards achieving it. There wouldn't have been a need for faith if works would have been where it was at. He wouldn't have had to prove his faith. He wouldn't have had to offer his son Isaac. It would have been something that would have been of debt or his, but as his due, what he would receive as a wage.
Can you expand on the debt a little bit more for me to put it in? I mean, I know that debt is something that you can't pay back, if I owe somebody something.
Well, in this case, what he's taught back in verse 4, you know, now to him that worketh is the reward not reckoned of grace but of debt. This would be like a worker who works to receive a wage. And so, at the end of the day, you would get what is indebted to you or what is owed to you, your wage. That's the kind of idea we're working with here with that verse. There you go. See, grace would be a free gift. You get it not because you deserve it, but because you met the qualification or God, you get God's favor.
You may disagree with me on that, but me, it gets back to the idea that there's not enough we can do to obligate God to save us, just like Abraham couldn't. And the amount that lacked with Abraham, we use Abraham, the amount that lacked, God extended grace to him, and it was through his faith that he received it.
Yeah, because if you could do what was needed done through works, then the Old Testament would have been sufficient.
Yep.
And it wasn't sufficient. Why? And the reason, for the reason you just stated, you could not do enough to get God's favor under the old law. There was nothing you could do. You still had the gap there. So therefore, there would be a debt that needed to be paid, because, you know, to fill in the gap. And thank goodness that Jesus chose to be that filler there, the part of the grace of God.
We express that Christ is a propitiation for our sins, which means filling the gap.
Yep. He paid the price. Question number three is, Abraham had no grounds of boasting before God or glory before God. Therefore, his justification was not by works. Yep, verse number two. Question four was, what was counted to Abraham for righteousness?
His faith.
What was his faith based on? His belief in God. In our language and our culture, we distinguish between the two, but a lot of cultures and languages do not distinguish between belief and faith in this context. He believed God, and it was counted to him for righteousness. Whenever I think about the belief that he had, it was something that moved him to do something. It wasn't, he just did it to be doing it. He actually understood or had the belief that it was necessary. You go back to Sunday night, we read Hebrews chapter 11. And in Hebrews chapter 11, it explains the sacrifice between him and Isaac a little further, that you don't have some more information than have in the Old Testament. And the information that you have there in the book of Hebrews about Abraham, it tells us there, the writer tells us, that he understood that God had the ability to raise his son from the dead if he were to kill Isaac on the altar. He also understood, it points out in Hebrews 11, he understood that even if it didn't happen in this life, there's a resurrection. So they look for a better place. And when I read passages like that and think about what Abraham was going to do if the angel hadn't stopped him, he was all in, completely all in, 100% all in. He was not backing out no matter what. And if it hadn't been for the angel stopping him, he would have killed him. Why? Because he believed God. He believed what God told him, what God expounded. Now the reason that's a good example for us today is, do we have that kind of belief that we will lay it 100% on the line? Family, friends, cannon fodder, so to speak. Because that's really what we are. Jesus said we're like sheep for the slaughter. There's where the example is for us. All in, 100% in. Not backing out. And because of this, that's why his son was spared. And that's why he's called the Father of the Faithful. And that's a whole list of things. All because he was all in. No doubt. Seems like we always, you know, as individuals, sometimes we have a little doubt. Well, maybe so. Or maybe this, maybe that. When we shouldn't. God said it. We believe it. Therefore, that is going to be our answer in what we're going to do. And that would be more of the type of faith, the righteousness of Abraham. Now, the next part of the question is explained. His faith is counted to him for righteousness. Now, if you look at the verse, this is where it got a little fuzzy here in the question. The form of that statement is listed twice. Which one's he talking about? You look at verse 5, it's word for word what he's got in the book. So I think that's the statement he's talking about. His faith is counted to him for righteousness. Now let's read verse 5. But to him that worketh not, but believeth on him that justifieth the ungodly, his faith is counted for righteousness. Now let's read this in the ESV. It was helpful for me. And to the one who does not work, but believes in him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is counted as righteousness. And then he goes on into David. Just as David also speaks of the blessing of the one who counts righteousness apart from works. Now then, what does it mean, or explanation here, for his faith was counted to him for righteousness? It's talking about the person who believes, and he's not basing his belief on what he can do or his works. In other words, it's dependence on God and his grace. I put kind of the thought I had for that was his belief in God moved him to action, thus proving faith in action, thus proving his faith, plus proving his belief. So, in other words, the thought I kind of had with this verse is the one who doesn't look at doing the works as righteousness, but living by faith, or the faith in action, or the faith in play, as the righteous part, is the one that God is going to justify. That's how the example of David starts to come into play. What's some of your thoughts on that? What?
We do the best we can. It gets back to the idea of God filling in. God's going to fill in for us, and he's going to make that bridge for us.
Yeah, he's going to take care of it. There is, in the business world, it reminded me of this. You got short-term insurance. Short-term disability, that's pretty common. It's also fairly common for long-term disability. Depends on the job. And what does your long-term disability generally cover most places? It covers 60% of your income. So if you become disabled long-term, they'll pay you 60% of your income minus taxes, which is going to knock off another 25%, 27% off of that. Don't we just love taxes? Social Security, Medicare, FICA, all that stuff. So what they call that is a partial coverage, because you're only 60% covered, so you're covered up to here. You're not covered from here to here. So what you do is you get a supplement insurance to cover your income from the 60% to the 100%, so that you're fully covered up to here, back up to here. It's this same idea here about the grace. God is filling in that which you don't have. He's providing the insurance policy for that which you don't have that is normal. If the one, as is mentioned here in verse 5, the one who does not work but believes in him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is counted as righteousness. Now, the denominational world will look at that and say that you don't have to do anything but believe. This is one of those passages where they will say that. You have to do nothing. All you got to do is believe. The Bible says so. Just read it right there. What they're discounting and not understanding is what the word believe means. The word believe there is more than just, it's not an emotion in this part, in this context. It's not an emotion, as the denominational world will equate it to an emotion. Or at least the definition towards an emotion. This, notice that in this belief, in this example of Abraham, did he just believe God and that it didn't do anything? No, he did everything. What was the first thing we read about Abraham and Sarah? What did they do? Way back in the book of Genesis.
They left. They went into a foreign country.
They did. God said, let's go, pack up. And we read of no argument. That's always been fascinating to me. No reasoning. He didn't bargain with God. There was no argument. He said, all right. Remember, they're wealthy people. Even by our standards, they'd be wealthy far as farming is concerned. Think of all the animals they had to gather up, the servants, all kinds of things, the equipment, the tents, and the housing, and all the belongings. They had to pile all that up, get all that together, and here they go. And what made this an act of faith, or at least to me, made it more of a belief in God type situation and an act of faith? Did God tell them where they was going? Didn't even tell them where they was going. He said, I'll show you. Would we do that? I have to say, that'd be hard for me to do. I'm not sure I would have done it. Really. That's the kind of faith and belief we're talking about. Just walking into it. Just walking into it and not, I shouldn't say not considered. I'm sure they considered it. But just walking into it and not stumbling. 100% believe, 100% all in. We're doing this. That's what we're talking about here when he talks about the one who does not work but believes in him who justifies the ungodly. His faith is counted as righteousness. Question number 5 is, David described the blessedness of what man? Verse number 6. Sir?
Man who has been forgiven.
Yes. Man who has been forgiven. Or in another translation, if you read in the King James, it's talking about the one who will not impute sin. Another way to look at it is whose sins are covered. Like I said, this is one of those passages here where it's helpful to read in a different translation. In the ESV, it says, blessed are those whose lawless deeds are forgiven and whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man against whom the Lord will not count his sin. And I read that and think, oh, that's a blessing indeed. The man whom God imputeth righteousness. That's who David is describing there. And then the next question, which kind of ties in with it, is who is the man to whom the Lord will not impute sin?
The one whose sins are forgiven.
Yep. And it's counted for righteousness. He's counted as righteous apart from what he does. It's an interesting, this is where if we're not careful, we get the thought crossed up because of what the denominational world is trying to get us to believe and trying to get us to understand. And the idea that works have no part in it whatsoever. We know that works does have a part in it. Paul is dealing with a group of people that believes it's all about works only. It's about works only. When you go to the book of James, he begins to make the argument that we have to do something, that faith is an activity. He makes the argument that if we do this, that, and the other, it, as far as righteousness goes, we, in other words, living it, we are demonstrating or working our faith. Now, he is not making a contradictory argument to Paul. You know, where it seems here in Romans, that he's talking about belief only, which is not. And James is talking about the uniting of belief and action, belief and works. But the works that he's talking about is basically us living out our faith. How I know this is the examples he gives. What are the two examples that he gives in the book of James that is a demonstration of faith? We can go to James chapter 2 if you want to follow along, to try to help us understand here. Get it up here. Verse, go ahead. Yeah, you're getting it.
Yeah. Okay. But when you put it that way, I'm just, okay.
In the book of James, chapter 2, verse 14, he says, "What doth it profit, brethren, though a man say he has faith and has not works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one say to him, Depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled, notwithstanding ye give them not those things which are needful to the body, what is it profit? Even so, faith that hath not works is dead, being alone. Yea, a man say, Thou hast faith, and I have works. Show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show you my faith by my works. Thou believest that there is one God? Thou doest well. The devils also believe and tremble. But wilt thou know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up Isaac his son on the altar? Seest thou hast how faith wrought with his works, and by works faith was made perfect or made whole. The scripture was fulfilled, which said, Abraham believed God, and it was imputed or counted unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. You see then how that by works a man is justified, and not by faith only. Now, by the examples he gives, do you understand what he's talking about works in this context, in this passage? Let's go to the first example. Brother or sister be destitute or be naked and destitute of daily food, and you say to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled. Was that a demonstration of faith? You believed, though, didn't you? You believed they had a need, but you done nothing about the need. There was no work involved. So you kind of see where he's trying to guide us here to get us to understand. So the one that demonstrates the faith is the one who would give the food and the clothing to the one that asks, the brother or sister that is naked and destitute of daily food. Second example he gives, Abraham, the same example Paul used. Abraham, our father, justified by works. How was he justified by works? By offering up Isaac, his son, on the altar. That was the work. But he did it. How did he do it? Through faith or belief in God, believing what God had to say. So now do you see how this is coming together? Works is not the standard by which we are justified. But works, action is required to show that you are faithful. Action is required to show that you can receive, be a recipient of grace and righteousness from God and be counted as righteous. Why? Because you did something. Now, back to Romans. Remember what he is fighting here. He is fighting the idea that works only through the law is the way to righteousness. That's why he's making the hard argument that you can't work to obtain righteousness. So you see, does that make any sense? Is that making any sense? So we really, essentially, you got two different arguments going on in James. It's a similar outcome, but it's two slightly different arguments in Romans and in James. And if you don't, you can't get that straight, then it's going to sound like there's a contradiction there when there's no contradiction. The work Paul is referring to, the works that cannot save, is works of the old law and you doing enough good to be able to obtain your salvation. That's the work Paul's talking about. The work James is talking about is you living it. That's why he used the example of Abraham and then about the one that is destitute of clothes and food.
Today, you may disagree with me on this, but today you see so many religious organizations that try to work their way to obligate God by doing all these charity events, all of this kind of stuff. They're trying to obligate God because they won't.
It's like they're trying to outgive God, isn't it?
Yeah.
Trying to outdo God, and it's just not gonna happen. And yeah, that's. All right. What question are we down to? Number seven. Okay. Was Abraham counted righteous before or after his circumcision? Before. Verse number 10. That's important because if you don't get that, then you've missed the argument. This is where they're going to start disagreeing. You don't read about it here, but I'm sure this is where they were starting to really get a disagreement with Paul and what he was saying. Abraham was counted righteous before his circumcision. Remember, to a Jew, circumcision was everything. That was the mark that you were righteous before God, that you were chosen of God. That was a mark of all kinds of religious significance. And by the context and what it seems to be that we read in this passage as well as some of the others, they were teaching that Abraham was not righteous until after justified until after circumcision. The answer is no, he was not. It was before. This blows up their argument, is what it does. It tears apart their argument that justification is through works, because he had not performed the work, the circumcision, before he was justified. Did I say that right? Yeah. He was justified first, and then the work was performed. So that's just like phase two of the argument. Question number eight is, why did Abraham receive circumcision?
It was a seal of a contract between him and God.
Yep, seal the righteousness of faith, or the contract between him and God. The next part of the question is, of whom is he the father? Of the Jews is, and many nations. If you look at verse number 11, I believe it tells us that he is the father of them that will believe. In other words, the righteous. So is he the father of faith for us today? Yes, we could make that argument. It's just would not be of direct blood ascendants. I think you probably could, but we can't trace it back to Abraham like they could at this point in time. Question number nine is, what was the promise that Abraham and his seed were to be heirs of the world fulfilled through the law or faith? Was it fulfilled through law, or was it fulfilled through faith? Through faith. Because the law always fell short. It couldn't get there. And, verse 13. For the promise that he should be heir of the world was not to Abraham and to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. In other words, it was through the new and living way, or the better way, which is the way of Christ, that this was made possible. And so here we see Paul starting to slip in little Jesus here, isn't he? Starting to slip that in on him a little bit. Question number 9 is, how was the promise that I just read that, didn't I? Question number 10 is, how is faith made void and the promise of none effect if those of the law are heirs?
Verse
14, 15, yep. Yep. So the law would be the rule, and if the law was the rule or what was under, then faith couldn't do anything. It couldn't take over, because it wouldn't be, because remember that the law of faith is fulfilled, or the way of faith is fulfilled in the law. What did Jesus say he came to do when he came here? I came to not to fulfill the law. Yeah, he came not to destroy it, but to fulfill it. And because he fulfilled it, it was no longer had an effect. It no longer had effect anymore because it was fulfilled. It had served its purpose. But if it was still in effect, then the law of faith couldn't work. Or the way of faith couldn't work, because it hadn't accomplished its purpose. Question number 11 is, explained, for where the law is, there is no transgression. If there is no law, there's nothing to condemn or to tell you that it's wrong. That's an important concept, you know, in the way our government works and the way things of our land works. If we don't have a law for it, it's free game, isn't it, so to speak, supposedly, free game. Now, there's some things that's detestable that people do that there's no law against. It's not condemned by the law, but it's, even though it may be detestable to us. Now, Paul, what he's doing is he's setting up the argument here about the righteousness of God. About the righteousness of God here, of how that this way is better than the old way. Next page. Justification by faith means it is of blank, whereas justification by the law means it is of blank. I put, based on verse number 16, where it says, therefore it is of faith that they may by grace to the end of promise might make sure all the seed, and not to that only, but to, which is of the law, but that also which is of faith of Abraham, who is father of us all. So I put justification by faith means it is of grace, because that's how we receive it, right? Because of grace. Whereas justification by the law, it is of faith, right? Because that's how the law was fulfilled. That question to me was a little bit tricky. No, you've got that right. I mean, that's a little different thought than what I had, but that fits. Because, justification by faith is of God. Grace provided, God provided grace. And justification by the law, to be justified by the law, you had to obey. It had to be of works. Yeah. It had to be of works. Or obedience through the works. Anybody else got a thought on that? All right, question number 13. Are we going to make it? We're going to almost make it through a lesson tonight. Have we ever done that? The God of Abraham believed, as revealed here, was able to do two things. What two things was he able to do? Verse 17.
Was that quicken the dead?
Mm-hmm.
And call those things which be not as though they were?
Yep, those are the two things. And what does it mean to quickeneth? To make alive. So he raises, he makes alive the dead. In other words, he raises them. Let me read a different translation here. As it is written, I have made you the father of many nations, and in the presence of God, in whom he believed, he gives life to the dead and calls into existence the things that do not exist. Think about that. That's exactly what he does. That's calleth those things which be as though they were. In other words, you can't see them. They're not there. That's how the whole world was created that way, wasn't it? See how he's strengthening his argument with that? The God of Abraham believed. What did he believe? Well, two things he believed in, two things that God was able to do. Raise the dead. That's why the giving of his son upon the altar, according to Hebrews, he knew that he could raise him from the dead, and he knew that if it wasn't in this life, he'd be raised in the resurrection. So there's the quickening, making alive the dead, and then he calls those things that be not as though they were. Back to that mountaintop experience, what happened there? What appeared? Two things. One, an angel. What was the second thing? The sacrifice. The ram had his horns caught in there. Yeah. So there was the two things provided that they didn't bring with them. So you kind of start to see the connection here of how this is supporting the righteousness of God and through the belief of and faith of Abraham. Number 14, in what sense was Abraham's belief that he might become the father of many nations, hope against hope?
He stared not at the promise of age.
That's right. When you think about the hope against hope as well, I had the thought about, did Abraham get to see the completion of the promise? No. Never seen it.
I think he did, but
not in person.
Not in his life.
That's right. Many of the people in Hebrews 11, they did not see what they were promised. But yet they believed, they saw it through faith, and that's why they were accounted that way. And he didn't witness it, but he knew that it would happen. And really, you could argue that the promise is still being unfolded today because time has not ended. Many more people are coming to Christ, and they will continue until it's no more. Question 15 is from a completely human standpoint. What two things seem to be completely against Abraham ever becoming a father of many nations?
His age for one thing.
And Sarah's age.
Yep. Yep.
Sarah's barren and children. It was kind of hard to think that his name would continue with
God. That's right. That, to me, this even makes it more an issue of faith, because in the physical sense, this was impossible. But with God, it wasn't impossible. It was possible for it to happen. How old was he whenever this was coming to pass? He was about 99. He's almost 100. How old was Sarah?
She was about 90.
Yeah, she's about 90. We don't see stuff like that. And we won't without God making it happen. Abraham's faith, 16, Abraham's faith was built completely upon what?
Believing God.
Believing God. God's promise. That's what it was completely built upon. So now you see how Paul's building this argument of where they have to believe that God is righteous because of the example of Abraham. Thus it is imputed for him for righteousness. Question 17, how can we enjoy the blessing of Abraham that Abraham enjoyed? Our faith in God, believing in him that raised Jesus, our Lord, from the dead, verses 24 and 25. Belief, the same type of belief that he had, which is unwavering, believing God for what he said and not questioning, but just following through, doing it. Unlike the works of the law, which you had to do to fulfill the law, and it was impossible, you couldn't be done, but yet he was still justified through faith before circumcision, and because he was, and he followed through later, he is called the father of the righteous, father of the faithful, father of the believers. True or false? Let's buzz through those right quick, and then we can put this lesson in the book. Abraham was justified by both faith and works. People were counted righteous in time past before the law of Moses. True. That's the example of Abraham, right? And David. Question number 3. Verses 4 and 5 teach that we are not required to obey. False. The obedience is what was building the faith, wasn't it? As we talked about. Number 4 is Abraham is an example of the kind of faith that pleases God. True. Because of what we read in the book of James, right? God was pleased with him. Number 5, Abraham had some doubts about the fulfillment of the promise. False. He didn't waver in that. Number 6, his righteousness was reckoned to Abraham while he was in circumcision. False. It was in uncircumcision. Now, because of this, this was a huge blow to the Jews in their belief, because they believed it was only through circumcision that righteousness could be achieved. Any comments or questions? So let me ask you this. So now do you feel like we have a better understanding than when we come in the door tonight? Good. I like to see that. I want to read to you one thing, and then I know our time's up. I thought this was a good little summary. This is from John R.W. Stout, S-T-O-T-T. I guess that'd be Stott. He wrote something. He says, let's consider, now we consider four assertions which Paul makes about Abraham's justification. The first three, which develop the three questions and answers of his diatribe at the end of chapter 3, verses 1 through 8, affirm that boasting is excluded. Verses 9 through 12, that circumcision makes no difference. In verses 13 through 17, that the law has its proper God-assigned place. Thought that was a pretty good little short summary right there. That sums that chapter up pretty well. Any questions or comments? Appreciate your attention. Appreciate your comments as well.